Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, half of all commonly used drugs profoundly affect the gut microbiome, so warns the experts. University of Groningen in the Netherlands. And we have a lot more, about 12 other studies we'll be sharing with you. Then we're going to look at the larger context of the people who are claiming no borders, open borders, and get rid of ICE. And others saying, you know, the police are all corrupt. Get rid of them. Okay. Fair enough. But let's pull back and see the consequences. I'll give you some startling consequences to that. Then we didn't have a chance to share the second lecture I did, where I was invited by activists in New Jersey, where they were trying to get mandatory vaccines. And they said, would I come down? I was happy to come down. I went down at the Trenton State House there, and right outside you could see the legislators in the background in the windows. I invited them out to discuss in a civil and open way why the information they'd been given was wrong, how they'd been given, let's say, talking points by lobbyists. We'll play that clip. It's 12 minutes. Then the idea that we should be virtue shamed by people who are not the examples of virtue. We'll play a clip, and in that is a really remarkable activist. We rarely hear about him in the United States. We'll hear from him today. This was on a new television program where the commentator asked him a simple question about the royals and Meghan, the new bride over there, talking about what we the people, must do to protect the environment. And then jumping onto a private jet owned by Elton John and flying off, and then flying four more times within the next week. Is there a contradiction there? Are there two standards? And Brendan discusses that. Brendan O'Neill, a firebrand, an extreme intellect. You'll hear that. So we have a lot of different things we're going to talk about today, and we always begin with the latest on health and healing. A new study presented at a European group of scientists found that 18 commonly used drug categories extensively adversely affect the toxomimetic structure and metabolic potential of the gut microbiome, meaning the good bacteria. Eight different categories of drugs were also found to increase antimicrobial resistance mechanisms in the study participants, meaning those people were less likely to have a drug when they needed it actually work. And all that was because of the medications disrupting the normal microbiome, something that is never discussed. Never. Just remember this. Your gut microbiota is the microbe population living in your intestines. It contains tens of trillions of microorganisms, including at least 1,000 different species of known bacteria. Now, the human gut's microbiota population is influenced by a number of different factors, including medication. The microbiome has received increasing attention over the last, let's say, 15 years, with numerous hundreds of studies reporting changes in the gut bacteria during and when you're obese, or when you have diabetes, or when you have liver disease, even cancer and neurodegenerative disorders. And the drug categories found to have the biggest negative impact on your bacteria would be metformin, that's used to treat type 2 diabetes, and antibiotics. That treats virals, particles, which it has no benefit for, and bacteria. Laxatives, used to treat or prevent constipation, and proton pump inhibitors, used to treat people who are generally affected by peptic ulcers or E. H. pylori. And the gut bacteria users showed increasing abundance of upper gastrointestinal tract bacteria and increased fatty acid production. Not good. So I don't know of a single doctor in the United States who, when telling people to take a medication, say, by the way, let's do a sampling of your gut bacteria, your microbiome, and then in a week we'll do another study to see what the change has been. It never happens, and yet there's profound impact. From Kyoto Bunkuwa University in Japan comes a study about lion's mane, like lion, L-I-O-N-S, mane, M-A-N-E. It's a mushroom, and it provides a substantial reduction to people suffering from anxiety and depression. Now, it's been used as a medicinal food with many benefits for centuries. And now that the modern science is able to break it down into its constituent parts, they're saying, yes, it is an effective natural antidepressant and anti-anxiety treatment modality. In this case, they actually had a placebo-controlled human clinical study where a group of female patients were used to look at the effects of lion's mane on menopause, depression, sleep quality, and anxiety. And they also had another group, equally matched, that took placebos. And there was a huge difference. The placebo group didn't really have any benefit, but the group that got the lion's mane decreased their depression and anxiety, and that's very important. In essence, higher rates of neurogenesis could prove to equal high rates of happiness, and lion's mane had that impact. So, one more thing that we can use to help us with different conditions. These are just pieces of puzzles. Also, from Kaczewski University in Poland, published in Environmental Medicine, Annals of Agriculture and Environmental Medicine, they found that positive outcomes of Qigong training, that's Qigong, in women. It reduced inflammation in the women. It increased gene expression. It's a really good study, and it just shows you that a simple exercise, it's simple in how it looks, it's profound in its implications, makes a big difference. And by the way, Qigong is an ancient Chinese exercise related to Tai Chi, T-A-I-C-H-I, and can affect gene expression in different cells. But they didn't really understand how this kind of therapy influences gene expression. And so, to address this, the researchers conducted an experiment at a martial arts dojo in Satra, Wise, in Poland. It involved a 4-day Qigong training session. And they took blood samples from the participants before and after the training period to determine which genes were affected by Qigong. They also collected 3 millimeters of venous blood to determine the expression of HSF1, that's a heat shock factor, and also heat shock protein. They use isolated what is called PMBC to determine gene expression using real-time research on PCR. And based upon all these findings, the researchers concluded Qigong can reduce inflammatory gene expression, meaning it intensifies the anti-inflammatory gene expression, meaning turning off inflammation in the body. Well, imagine how that would help people with arthritis, fibromyalgia, lower back pain, intermittent claudication, pain in your calves, headaches of different types. All that would be benefited. Plus people with cancer. And so that's good. And that's the first time I've seen a study like that. So that's very exciting, very positive. Also, what all looks like in the brain. This is the University of Amsterdam. A new study sheds light on how our brains respond to awe-inspiring nature. Let's put this into a little more lay context. When was the last time you experienced awe? Perhaps you were stopped in your tracks by a beautiful vista on a recent hike, or captivated by a painting at your local art museum, or moved to tears at a concert or a church. Or maybe you were just sitting on your couch breathlessly watching an episode of Planet Earth. Whatever it was, you probably weren't thinking much about yourself or your to-do list. In fact, every day on my Facebook page, and by the way, we've had, the last time I looked, we had thousands, tens of thousands of people who wanted to be friends on the Facebook, and I've asked my IT people, why am I restricted to 5,000? And I've yet to hear an answer that makes sense, but we're going to work on that so everybody who wants to be on there can be. Because I put probably in a day 50 important progressive articles of what's happening around the world by honest journalists. I also put videos up there to inspire and lighten our heart and put us in a better mood. A lot with animals, you know, abandoned puppies were discovered by a cat, and the cat nursed the puppies and bonded with them. And now it became, the dogs grew up thinking that the cat was its mother, and they just love her to death. They just, you know, everywhere she goes, they're the dogs. And also where a baby chimpanzee was abandoned by its mother. But another chimpanzee, a female chimpanzee, brought her over to a group of female chimpanzees, so they all raised this baby themselves. And you see this chimpanzee climbing over their head and jumping from shoulder to shoulder, and they're tickling it and giving it kisses. It's just adorable. You know, so it's going to grow up healthy and safe. And then you see a man who raised a gorilla until it was too large, and then it was returned to nature. It was put on a large island out in the middle of a river in Africa. And 7 years had gone by, and the man went looking for the gorilla and was told which island it was, but it's a very large island. And he kept calling out the gorilla's name. Now the gorilla comes down to the shore. And so he goes over, not certain if the gorilla will remember him, and the gorilla starts giving him hugs and kisses. Well, you watch that, it just melts your heart. You think, wow, that's an awe moment. So what I try to do is I try to get some of the most beautiful pictures of nature, and I post them every day. And beautiful, heartwarming events between humans or animals. And the one I posted recently was, they wanted to see what would happen to a homeless person who was given some money that they didn't, by accident. He walks by a guy and he intentionally drops his wallet out, and there's several thousand dollars in cash in the wallet, and he keeps walking. So the homeless guy gets up and sees that the wallet's been dropped, and looks inside, and then he runs down the street and gives it back to the guy. So that was good. And they're filming this from across the street. The guy didn't know it. But then the guy gives him $100. So he goes in the store, and you see a big sign saying liquor. But evidently it was a more than liquor store, because he comes up with all these bags filled with food. And he goes across the street to where all these homeless people are, and he gives out, well, that's another wow moment. You know, you think, someone who has nothing, where people walk by him as if he has no human value. And he had not lost his dignity, nor his moral understanding of the significance of sharing. So then when you think, well, do you walk by a homeless person as if they're invisible? Well, maybe that'll get you to stop and realize that's a sacred human being. Different circumstances than what you have or they once had. But we can't keep walking by problems as if somehow they're someone else's to deal with. The government, the state. It's not how life works or should work. In any case, we need wow moments. And that's why I provide them on my personal Facebook for people. But today we're going to expand how people can see this. Anyhow, the University of Amsterdam had their scientists did some MRI, which MRI means magnetic resonance imaging. They scanned the brains of a group of participants, 18 to 41 years of age, and then they showed them three different types of 30-second videos. And the videos featured awe-inspiring natural phenomena like stunning vistas and the BBC's Planet Earth, which is a great series I recommended, and funny animals, elephants playing with tires and jumping in swimming pools, and neutral landscapes like a small babbling brook. And what makes awe so transporting and overwhelming and even mystical at times? And that's something that only people who understand Rumi, the great poet and philosopher, those who understand what shamans actually do and healers actually do, can appreciate. You're going to another level of awareness. And the researchers explored this question, and it was published in the Human Brain Mapping. And it showed there's a substantial difference in brain activity when participants were immersed in watching and their minds could wander versus when they had focused tasks to perform while watching. So that's important to us. So one more reason why we have to keep time aside each day to bring something into our mind, into our vision, into our senses, our sound, that inspires awe. It helps us. Helps the brain. Helps the immune system. Also from Georgetown University Medical School comes a study about exposure to environmental PCBs impairs brain function in this laboratory experiment. And this was a group of neuroscientists from the medical center at Georgetown University, and they found that the PCBs, that PCB stands for polychlorinated biphenyls, and in astrocytes, these cells that support neurons and are critical for homeostasis throughout the central nervous system. And it shows that the more you're exposed to plastics and chemicals that we use every day, that that really impairs brain function. One more reason to use stainless steel, cast iron skillets, a glass, and stay away from the plastic. And also, glucose, which is sugar, wears down your circadian clocks if you're overweight, and that drives cardiovascular risk. This is from Medical College of Georgia. So when you have a high glucose, like in diabetes, or when you're overweight, that gums up the works of the circadian clocks inside your cells that help regulate the timing of many body functions across a 24-hour a day, and it drives the risk of cardiovascular disease. One more reason why having diabetes, prediabetes, or being overweight impairs your lifespan. Oh, and by the way, this morning, while we were just about ready to take everyone out for their morning walk in a bucolic environment, a woman who came who's got all kinds of health issues, but one was diabetes, and her fasting blood sugar when she arrived here for the first two mornings was 184, and this morning it was 110. That's a huge drop. 74 points, there's no medication that could do that. So she was very, very happy about that. So again, we've got to bring in the discipline for our diet, our mindset, not absorbing all the stress that happens every day in our lives as if it's personal to us. We have to exercise, and that can help our biochemistry. That's the latest on health and healing. We're 19 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, I was just notified that Jesse, he runs Progressive Radio Network and does a great job, by the way. I mean, we have all the heavy hitters, and ours is not political. We don't allow people to come in and just to rant, you know, based on their ideology, or we ask people to come in and to share things that empower people, to empower them to think deeper, more meaningful. You know, Jimmy Dore and Lee Camp and Chris Hedges and Ralph Nader and Abby Martin. I mean, we have 90 of them. So We're very happy with our lineup. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome you from all over the world. Okay, now we're going to go to a clip. And this clip, this is a shocking clip. If you saw it, it will boil your blood. You're just going to hear it since you can't see it. And it's short. Then I'll tell you the context that you have to understand why I'm sharing this with you.
Khan emerges from the forest, and he isn't quite what I was expecting. He started his career as the bait in a honey trap, convincing young girls that he would marry them and then quickly selling them off once he'd got them into the cities. He now has over 75 traffickers working for him and is currently being investigated for over 25 different offences. But he has never been tried for any of his crimes.
I want to find out how many girls he's trafficked in the time that he's been a trafficker and how long has he actually been a trafficker. How many? What would you look for to make the decision to traffic a particular person? How much does a girl go for when she's sold at auctions?
Maximum, the highest, 10 lakh taka pondo peyechi ami.
We have been told by more than one source that you traffic girls as young as 9 years old. Is that true? If there's enough hue and cry created because they've gone missing, some girls you return to the community. Is that true?
No.
Okay, well, we've been told the reason you don't bring girls back is that you kill them. Is that true? So you are saying that you do kill them, that they are killed? So you kill girls? Do you have any idea how many? So he's saying that he's responsible for the death of at least 400 young girls. Mm-hmm. There are people who are going to be wondering why you would admit to me that you have been involved in or have sanctioned the death of 400 young girls. Why would you tell me this, and why would you tell the truth? Are you telling me the truth? So will you carry on killing young girls to save your own skin?
Yeah. Bring it down, please. Let me put this in perspective. There are small groups of people in the United States who do not represent the majority of Americans who come forward and say what we should do and what we should believe because that's what they demand. And they do all this virtue shaming. If we're not supporting them on whether it's an environmental issue or a political issue, if we're not condemning the people they condemn or supporting the people they support, somehow we are the enemy for that. And one of the things they've been yelling at is, close, you know, open up the borders, no border security. Let me explain why we have to have border security, but have a different type of border security, where people who legitimately need to be in America for their own protection and allow them an opportunity to be assimilated into the larger American economy and society and culture and can benefit from it, and we would benefit from them being here, is that the system is completely broken at every level. But here's what makes this important. Create a new system with hundreds of checkpoints and medical facilities and opportunities for people to have shelter and classes, classes in language if they don't speak the language, opportunities where the best places to go and help them get there with busing them there. Give them some support, give them some money, because they're going to come across frequently illegally and won't have any money. And so they're less likely to become involved in anything that is not not legal. So on a humanitarian level, you want to make sure that they have an opportunity to succeed. Don't ever put someone in a position to fail and then blaming them for failing. It's the system that has failed because it's been politicized and weaponized. So if you had a place for 1,000 people to stay, families, and then you had a commissary where they could go and get food and healthy food, you had a place where they could get medical treatment for the conditions they may have, psychological help for them, that's the way you do it. And then you have classes on where the most beneficial place based upon their skills are, and then you set up other places where when people get to that place, they at least are not strangers and they're being welcomed in, then they have orientations to help them assimilate and are not exploited by putting them into cheap farm positions. But the other side of that is, when you say just open borders, that fella that you just heard there, he's a part of over 16 countries in Central and South America, from Honduras to Ecuador, from Colombia, and these countries are virtually controlled at every level, including Mexico, by narco-terrorists. These people have vast armies. They have paid off everybody. They have paid off the police, the governors. They have paid off even members of the Mexican National Guard. They're supposed to be their most elite. In fact, one of the biggest drug cartels are former elites in the military. So now, that one fella represents only one of at least 50,000 other guys who are either bringing women across as drug mules or women across, young girls across, to supply them into the safe houses, meaning safe for them, where in every community in America, men will go or women will go, mainly in men, and girls. And then, if there's any problem with the girl, they kill them. So if one guy is responsible for 400 to 500 girls he's killed, imagine how many more girls are going to be killed, underage girls, innocent of all things, because you wanted your ideology, your in-the-moment quick political fix without any comprehension of the consequences of inane, incomplete, and purely unbridled emotional ideology that is thrust upon us as if somehow your bromide for what we should do is the only one, when it's completely ludicrous and you're not thinking about the consequence to other people. In point of fact, 84% of all the families that presented themselves at border legally were found to have no DNA matching the children to the parents. That means that those parents were forced to bring girls across that were given to them. And they were told, the family members you leave behind, for example, in El Salvador, where MS-13 reigns, we will kill your family, your aunts, your uncles, your brothers and sisters, if you do not get that girl across the border and into this location, and here's the address, and then you return. That's what's going on. Now, that's just the human trafficking. And if you care about women and you care about children, then you should care about the consequences of a policy that would allow unlimited amounts, hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of young girls to be brought across. It would be one wholesale abuse, a form of, It would be one of the most horrendous crimes imaginable, as it already is in the other parts of the world. Now, think of if you have no one checking across the border, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, and already Al-Qaeda, ISIS, Al-Nusra, and all other terrorist groups, of which there are more than 500, would try to get in here and kill as many people as possible. And we're not talking about running around with a gun and killing people. We're talking about poisoning water supplies and putting a radioactive dirty bomb someplace. Those are real threats. And they're happening around the world. And they could happen here. But then we would be inviting them in. Now, last year, 44,000 Americans died from fentanyl. And that was all manufactured in China. And they used their Chinese to Mexican connections. And then they come across the border. Well, imagine how many deaths there would be if you had open borders. If you have closed borders and you have 44,000 deaths, you would have hundreds of thousands of fentanyl deaths a year. So you see, before you suggest a policy that is not thought through and the consequences, challenge yourself. Deconstruct your own arguments. No different than when I see all the people running for president and their supporters, Cortez supporting Bernie Sanders. Nothing that they're thinking about makes any sense. It simply wouldn't work. We're not going to, the world's not going to end in 10 years, but more importantly, we're not going to do a damn thing about that because they're going wrong with the right intentions. I'll give them that. With the right intentions, everything they're doing is going to end up wrong. One example, universal health care is what we need. Right now, as of this morning, 0.1% of the world's wealth is held with under 3,000 people. And that's more, that's about 100, I believe it was $124 trillion. That's more than half the rest of the population on the entire planet combined. They have an inordinate amount of power. Have you seen one of those people actually doing anything with their own lifestyles except expanding it and increasing their consumption and their carbon footprint actually help with the environment? No. How about the professional class of 17 million lawyers, scientists, doctors, engineers, accountants, and their families? Are they restricting and minimalizing their life and going vegan and not going private jets and private helicopters? No. They're expanding their lifestyle. Well, if the best and brightest, if the policymakers and opinion leaders in society are not going to do anything, then where is the model that represents a critical paradigm shift? It doesn't exist. So talking about it is one thing, and the only reason that they're using and abusing this Greta Thunberg is because she excites the students and the young people, at least those who are actually understanding what she's saying, to take that hysteria back into their home to get their parents to do something. Some of the parents will, some of the parents won't. But that's not going to change global warming. That's not going to stop global warming. It's not going to stop the acidification of the ocean. It's not going to stop acid rain. It's not going to stop anything. It's bad. Nothing. It will simply make more younger people aware there is a problem, but it throws them in a crisis mindset instead of organizing to plant trees in every community and to go vegan in every community and support locally grown food in every community. And to downsize their lifestyle and stop buying things, clothes made from Bangladesh where women are exploited and stop buying chocolate where people were virtually working under slave conditions. You can raise consciousness at the local level. Expect nothing above the local level because nothing's going to come to you because the entire system has been captured by the very polluters and those who are a compromise. Our politicians, which politicians come forward outside of Tulsi Gabbard and said, that we need to go to a meat-based diet and are themselves vegans. Now, don't tell me about Cory Booker and the other people because they were out there cooking for 10,000 people in Iowa at a big cookout. A vegan would not go to a cookout and cook hamburgers and show the crowds, look, I'm vote for me. I'm compromisable on all my ethics. I'll say one thing and do just the opposite. But young people are far more idealistic, at least those who choose to become reasonably informed without, don't scare the person, empower the person. When you scare a person, you're scaring them to control them. When you empower them, you're unleashing all the vitalism of their thoughts to be able to do something constructive. And I don't see that anywhere. By the way, we were able to get Bernie Sanders information on holistic protocols to help him recover and actually be healthier than he's ever been. I don't know what he's done with it, but at least we got to him. He is aware. If he uses it or not, that's his choice. I'm hopeful that he will. But let me just give you an example. So nothing's going to happen on the environment. We increased our CO2 level last year by 3.3% here in the United States. And China is increasing it at an astronomical level. It's a contradiction. And it's almost oxymoronic. On the one hand, they're creating more solar panels than anyone else in the world. On the other hand, they're polluting more than anyone else in the world. But the biggest polluter in the world is the U.S. military. And there's absolutely no criticism by anyone running for office or in office to stop it, because then you would have to stop this massive amount of graft, corruption, inefficiency, duplicity, redundancy that is the basis of them receiving $1.3 to $1.5 trillion a year. And where people in a ghetto who need community garden, need a health clinic, need to have a gang exit strategy to help people get out of gangs and to help the neighborhood. No, we don't have a penny for that. But money they don't need for the military, we give it to them, and pollution with no standards of control. So who exactly is supposed to save you? The answer, yourself, in small groups of people working with a common interest. The government, the state, federal, and local government is not going to help you. They're all corrupt and all compromised. Industry is not going to help you. And the new ruling elites, the people that you would expect to see crapping on the floor at Versailles by just raising a dress that took them a year to pay for and crapping and walking away. That actually happened, by the way. There were no bathrooms at Versailles, so people just went everywhere. So they had great etiquette. They had a book of etiquette of how to dress and how to sit and how to bow and how to eat and what to eat and how to make a wig and wear a wig and dust your head. That they mastered. But these were the people who needed to be a part of that circle of power. And we have 17 million of those professionals, including 10 million millionaires. Now you're 27 million. Add in their families, you're 60 million. And then you wonder why we have such diversity of have and have-nots. And nothing, not a single solitary thing is being done to change it. So for Bernie Sanders, I'm going to give you some free advice now. And Cortez, it's one thing to use your power for yourself. It's another thing to use a little scholarship where there's massive power and no scholarship, zero scholarship. One, the Republicans are going to push back in the conservatives saying it's impossible to do this universal health care because of all the money that it would cost the average person raising their taxes. And you have not challenged them. In point of fact, you will save $2.2 trillion a year off our current $3.5 trillion if you simply take all unreasonable profits out. I didn't say all profits. I said unreasonable profits. So you give 100% profit for every drug to every manufacturer above the 30-day generic cost. That way, they won't be the most powerful, rich industry in the world and won't have all the money for the lobbyists. But you've just saved right there that money because you control the cost. You take out the same cost from all hospitals, so it doesn't cost $1,300 just to sleep in a hospital bed with no treatment, no food. Not that you'd ever want to eat the food in a hospital, but that saves. You could only charge a reasonable fee, like $100 a night for a bed. So when you take out the unreasonable profits, you've saved that money. Then you take away the ability to sue any individual doctor or nurse or hospital. Instead, you have a compensation. You have no-fault health insurance. So the doctors all put 1% of their profit into a common fund that will pay to help people who have been injured or lost income, and you take out the excessive litigation. That is a huge amount of money. It's over $250 billion. You also take out fraud. That's another $200 billion. You take out the insurance industry entirely. That's one-third. That's $1.1 trillion a year because you don't need any insurance companies. You don't need any of the administrators. And then you pay for doctors' education, nurses' education, and give them a guaranteed income from the time they graduate from medical school through internship and residency, and so they don't go into medical practice with debt that compromises some of their values, gouging and looking for where they can make the most money. You ban all gifts, all money from any outside source like insurance companies or pharmaceutical companies, and you put in a new curriculum in medical schools that include lifestyle, behavior, environment, the psychology of health. You put those in, and then you've just saved all that money. So instead of spending an additional $9 to $91 trillion, that's how broad the spectrum of distance is, you're actually saving money, reducing taxes, increasing availability. Now, I've written all this up in great detail, all completely factually correct, and it's on my website. I sent a copy to Cortez, I sent a copy to Bernie Sanders, and I received no feedback. So at least we can provide the legitimate scholarship, non-political, to help people move something forward, but do it in a way that is likely to actually make a difference. Now, we're going to go, at this time, we're going to go to my Trenton, New Jersey clip. And we'll run just a little long, because just a minute long, but I want people to hear this, because this is how we tried to show the legislators right out front of the Trenton State House, and you can see all the legislators in the window, and we invited them out. This was my effort to try to rally the people, citizens of New Jersey, and their legislators and the media to come together to have at least reasonable discussions by looking at the science behind the safety and efficacy of vaccines, because there is no one in the media, not the New York Times, Washington Post, CNN, none of these people are looking at the legitimate science. They're looking at the corporate, proprietary science that is fraudulent. Now to the clip.
There really shouldn't need to be such a gathering of people. We have been led to believe that science should be the final arbiters of everything that should be done in the name of public health. I have a PhD in public health science and human nutrition. I'm a research scientist at the Institute of Applied Biology and also a professor at Fairleigh Dickinson here in New Jersey. But when I read the scientific literature on vaccines, I'm starting with an assumption. We wouldn't have mandated vaccines unless they were proven safe and effective. You cannot walk into any pediatrician's office and ask the doctor, "Doctor, are the vaccines you're about to give my child, are they proven safe and effective?" Without exception, every doctor in America will have to say yes. If they said no, then you would reasonably say, "Well, why are you giving them to my child? Is it a human experiment, a social experiment? What is it?" So they're saying yes. Now, there's a little problem here. When I went to the scientific literature, I could find not a single study anywhere that proved that a given vaccine would be able to prevent the disease from occurring in your child and also maintain safety. And if you doubt me, then the next time your doctor wants to give you or your child a vaccine, simply say, "Will you give me a written promise that if I'm damaged or my child's damaged, you will personally pay the bills?" Ago, I produced a film, a documentary called The Druggie of Our Children. In it, I ask a simple question. Why is it when I was growing up as a baby boomer, we didn't have 10 million American children waking up and having to take a medication each day before they could go to school? But today, that is considered common. Ritalin, Prozac, Paxil, Zoloft. And there are parents today who will have their children taken away from them and have if they didn't agree to have their children drugged. Now, that's what happens when we allow those people, and I'm not going to be kind to the New Jersey legislators. You can be, I'm not. You don't see me doing deals behind closed doors. Come out and show your faces. Politics politics and paid for politics. Since when do you, the public, not become a special interest group? Since when are your interests put second behind someone who managed to get the meetings and get the legislation passed? Everyone else before you. Well, Governor, that's history. Why don't you allow me to come in there to debate your committee members on vaccine?
You have knowledge.
Because I can answer them. I can stand up for you, and I'm not one of the shills. Now, I would have to take one exception to the good doctor over here. And that is, he's and a whole lot of other doctors and activists want us to kumbaya with the medical community and the legislators. As we're patient and we're cooperative and we take a ticket and get in line, they'll pay attention to us. Since when? 728,000 doctors under 2,000 practice complementary medicine or even care about prevention or nutrition, behavior or your environment, what you put into your body in the morning. Well, that means that 99.8% of doctors over 40 years have not chosen not to listen to the truth about cause and effect. You don't have to be a scientist, you don't have to be a physician to understand that when your kid was normal, healthy, and growing and developing, and then you got it vaccinated, and then the child couldn't develop and couldn't look at you and couldn't talk anymore, you don't need a PhD or an MD at your name to know that there was something that occurred. Our government has taken the side. Our state government, our federal government has taken the side of the vaccine manufacturers. Your child has been held hostage and the health of that child by this kind of nonsense. They do not have science on their side. They cannot show you the studies for safety and efficacy. And then you go to their actual, what they really talk about. Now, I would like Congressman Burton, a man I respect, Dan Burton, who held hearings. I would like for him to see these documents and watch a film that we have of the greatest developer of vaccines in American history, a man who said just before he died, recently, that no vaccine he developed was free of contaminants, including stealth viruses that they injected into guinea pigs and caused cancer. When that doctor said that he told Sabin, of the Sabin polio vaccine, about it, he was angry, and what did they do? Decided to cover it up. But how many people today from the vaccines have SV40, simian virus 40, in their body? And yet, what has the government done to try to notify us? I have reports that shows every vaccine is contaminated. I defy any vaccine maker to show me a completely pure, sterile vaccine with no DNA that's contaminated, no RNA that's contaminated, and no virus activity is contaminated. Let them show me. Just before he died, and yet the vaccine industry points to him, Dr. Hilleman, as the greatest expert. Well, Hilleman said the truth. Here's something else you haven't heard. Let me just quote a few specific people who before Congress will say one thing under oath, but to the public something else. I want Burton to reconvene a hearing and see if he cannot bring the people from the CDC up on charges, just like the tobacco industry was found guilty of perjury. Share the exact words of the very same high-level pro-vaccine officials that they would count upon as the experts instead of you as the experts. And these are the people who represent the health government agencies of our government, their academic medical advisors and pharmaceutical leaders. These are the people who shape the propaganda supporting the vaccine industry. I go to a transcript of the now infamous secret meeting held by high-level officials and scientists from the CDC, the FDA, the World Health Organization, and representatives of every major vaccine manufacturer, including GlaxoSmithKline, Merck, Wyeth, Aventis. This private meeting was held at a retreat center in Simpsonwood, Georgia. The 262-page official transcript of the gathering we have. They never knew that it would be made public. The closed Simpsonwood meeting was urgently called to address the result of an alarming Centers for Disease Control study. The CDC epidemiologist, Dr. Tom Verstraeten, after analyzing medical records of 100,000 children, noted thimerosal was the likely culprit for the large increase in neurological disorders, including speech problems, ADD, and autism in vaccinated children. He said, quote, "I was actually stunned by what I saw." Now, a top consultant for the American Academy of Pediatrics, Dr. Bill Weil, told the assembly, quote, "You can play with this all you want. The results are statistically significant," unquote. Dr. Richard Johnson, a pro-vaccine immunologist and pediatrician from the University of Colorado, excused himself early from the gathering after stating, quote, "Forgive my personal comment. I do not want my grandson to get thimerosal-containing vaccine until we know better what is going on," unquote. But much of the meeting's discussion dealt with how the parties might cover up the CDC study's findings in order to avoid what Dr. Robert Brent, a leading pediatrician at Alfred DuPont Hospital for Children's Disease in Delaware, called, quote, "a bad position from the standpoint of defending lawsuits." Dr. John Clements, vaccine advisor for the World Health Organization, stated the research, quote, "should not have been done at all. The study will be taken by others and will be used in ways beyond the control of this group," unquote. Being told over and over again by scare tactics, the members of this legislature were told, "if you stop mandatory vaccine, you're going to see epidemics like measles come back again." Really? Did you actually do your homework? Well, I did. Here are the actual government statistics from 1838 to when the vaccines were implemented in 1967. High back then, dropping. Guess what? We had better sanitation. We had cleaner water. We were pasteurizing milk. We had public health measures. And by the time the vaccines was introduced, it was 98% gone. Whooping cough, 95% gone. Every major disease was almost gone before the vaccines. So how can you say 100% of the improvement is vaccinated for the vaccine and give no credit to public health measures? This is what happens when you do not have, in a democracy, democracy in these halls by allowing free and open discourse among people with different opinions. All the time I have, but I want to say thank you, thank this group for standing up. Let your voices be heard. Good. Let the governor know you count. Listen to us, governor. We count.
And that was the speech that I gave. Extemporaneous speech, and we brought over 10,000 references to the scientific peer review literature from PubMed to give to the governor, to give to the legislators in New Jersey to show them that they have been lied to by the lobbyists for all the pharmaceutical companies and the people speaking on behalf of the CDC and FDA, two criminal organizations. Not a single person would come out to look at the references, let alone take them. We came with the truth, we had scientific literature, and they rejected it. The New York Times will reject any truth outside of what aligns with its ideologies. And unfortunately, that's happening everywhere today in our society. And finally, early this morning at about 3 o'clock, I got a notice that more information came in from a whistleblower or person inside Wikipedia. And so as of now, up on PRN.fm, you will see what he sent. Communications, direct communications between skeptics controlling Deepak Chopra and my biographies, our biographies on Wikipedia, and how they were, quote, "get the dirt," and, quote, "only use negative material." And we have pages upon pages of how every single person that they attack, they have this cabal that goes about looking and making up. If nothing's up, they make it up. So this is what's happening, and our attorneys are sending letters as of tomorrow, warning every member of the board of Wikipedia, every officer in Wikipedia, every fiduciary in Wikipedia, as well as all the skeptics, because now we know who they are, that they are in violation of the laws, and we intend to sue them. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.